Welcome to The Firing Line with Rick Travis, Legislative Director of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. The Firing Line radio show is brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association, CCW Safe, and Turner's Outdoorsman. And now, here's your host, Rick Travis.
Good afternoon, patriots of the Inland Empire and throughout Southern California. This is your host on CRPA Firing Line Radio, Rick Travis, the Legislative Director. And I am so excited to let you know what's going on in the courts. Today I have, from Michelle and Associates, one of their finest attorneys, Tiffany Chevron, who is going to help update you on everything legal. And Tiffany and I have worked together in this space for, I'm almost scared to say this, well over a decade.
A long time.
And have got to know each other, have got to go through some really rough times defending your Second Amendment rights. So, Tiffany, we had a bill that came out, 2571, that did pretty much irreparable damage to youth shooting sports throughout the state on multiple levels. Made it so that, you know, it was hard to fund kids who were on competitive shooting teams, hard to make sure that parents could brag about what their kids had done. And then, ironically, I remember a really good friend of mine that you've kind of known through me that runs the team at Virginia Military Institute called and said, hey, I can't even go out and scout for kids because for every time I send a letter, I'm going to have to pay like $25,000 fine. And the university's like, no. And we found that was generally the attitude of every university and college outside of California. What happened in the courts?
Yeah, so absolutely horrible law that was actually filed through emergency action by the governor, who went online and had this huge press conference about how we're horrible people for allowing youth to shoot firearms instead of actually seeing what it is and seeing that kids can shoot firearms and it's a viable sport. And so basically this law said you can't talk about anything Second Amendment, any manufactured goods, guns, ammo, anything like that with kids under 18. And so we filed a lawsuit, youth marketing lawsuit. It was filed in federal court. And at the same time, there was another case that was filed through Safari Club International. And they filed a little bit after ours with CRPA. And so we won at the Ninth Circuit. The state tried to stay the injunction where we won there, and the Ninth Circuit wasn't having it. They said, no, we're not going to stay this injunction. We're going to send it back to the lower court. Lower court has kind of been dragging their feet and not issuing the injunction. And so just today, because of our win at the Ninth Circuit, the Safari Club International Court, that judge in that case decided to go ahead and issue an injunction in the case. So now SB 2571 is enjoined currently, which is great. That means these kids don't have to worry about it. The manufacturers don't have to worry about who sponsor the youth events. And it's just a really great day. And so we're very happy that that judge saw fit to go ahead and issue that injunction because it was on the Ninth Circuit panel who said we are liable to win this case. We're going to win this case based on everything that's been presented. And so based on that, we get the injunction. So it's a really good day for youth shooting sports in California.
So once again, the governor and his cronies in Sacramento are proven to be unconstitutional in their methodologies to go against us.
We try to tell them every time, you know, I mean, we try to save the state of California money and we try to save them the heartbreak, but they just keep going forward and wanting to push this agenda that is unquestionably unconstitutional. It just is sad that it takes so much money and effort to prove that time and time again.
Folks, I want what Tiffany has said to really sink in with all of you as you're listening to this on your Saturday. Or if you're listening to it delayed on one of our podcasts, folks, literally, we have multiple cases up against the state of California that are costing millions of dollars, not the governor's money, not the legislator's money, your money, taxpayer money, at a time where we actually have economists arguing that California is in a worse position than it was in the 1930s during the Depression economically, accounting for all the changes and how much things were worth. And yet this is their choice, to continue to be unconstitutional and blow your taxpayers' dollars on this. So let this sink in as we're talking about. This isn't the only case that's going on. So I also understand we've had some movement in a couple of other cases, Tiffany, dealing with things like roster. What is the update on that?
Yeah, so the California roster, that's our Boland case. We had oral arguments in that case, and the case went under submission with the court. And then the court did something very strange that they've never done before. And it kind of threw us all for a loop because we had never seen this before, really, in all the years of practicing law and Second Amendment law, especially. They vacated the submission, which means they said, we know you did oral argument, but we're not going to take your case for consideration because everybody wants to wait on the Duncan v. Bonta case to see what happens with that. And that Duncan case is currently under submission with the Ninth Circuit on Bonk panel. And so what we're starting to see again is the same thing we saw, was it last summer or maybe the summer before, where everything started kind of piling up at the Ninth Circuit. That's what we're seeing right now. So the Boland roster case is there. We presented all the oral argument, we presented everything, but now we're probably going to see them come back and ask for additional, maybe supplemental briefing after the Duncan case is finalized. And that's because these courts don't want to rule that the roster is unconstitutional. They don't want to have to rule that. And so they're hoping beyond a shadow of a doubt that something will come out in the Duncan case that will save them from having to rule based on actual constitutional principles. It makes it very difficult when something is blatantly unconstitutional under the Bruin standard. And they have to try to rule differently. So they're waiting. They're kind of biding their time to see if there's any possible saving grace coming out of the Duncan case.
So talking about Boland and staying focused on that for a moment, that deals with the roster, with the handguns, as we both know. Are rosters in of themselves, when it applies to the Second Amendment, unconstitutional, is a question I get asked. And the reason, because I'm not here to trick you or anything, the reason I'm bringing this up is because currently, as you know, we have an assembly bill from Manchin looking at creating a roster for firearm safety devices, i.e. safes. And therefore, in one fell swoop, making every safe in California obsolete and forcing you to have to go buy a new one. What is the court stand on rosters, or do they treat rosters for different things different ways? Because that's a question I'm getting asked a lot. I'm sure people on this show are like, yeah, great question.
Yeah, that is a great question. So I think the answer to that is it's going to depend very much, very heavily on the facts of whatever you're arguing for in the case. Rosters in general would not be something that would be applied. That wouldn't be a standard that would be applied. You'd have to focus on the individual facts of the case. But regardless of what those facts are in individual cases, we have the Bruin standard now. And the Bruin standard says that if it affects the Second Amendment, and your rights under the Second Amendment, then it falls under this rule of having to look towards historical tradition. And the historical tradition is where the state keeps getting hung up because they cannot go back to the 1700s, 1800s and find laws on the books that prohibit firearms in most ways, especially rosters. There were no rosters. Except for there were a few tax rosters where people had to register their firearms for maybe a tax or something like that, but no rosters for the approval of a firearm. That was just not something that was done at that time. And so and this is the case in a lot of these issues that we're fighting in court. The state is having a really difficult time going back and finding these historical analogs that match up with these modern day laws where they're trying to take away our rights. And the Bruin court said, you can't, if you can't find a historical analog and it affects the Second Amendment, then it's unconstitutional, period. That's what the Bruin standard says.
So, and we're running out of time in this segment, but I want to start this conversation off. I think for people to understand the historical analogs, it's very interesting that the far left Dems in our legislature, the Attorney General Bonta, and the governor have tried to use some historical analogs, to be fair. And we're going to be extremely fair in this one, because I think it's important that people realize that they have really reached folks back in history and have found some analogs that we're going to discuss when we come back in this next segment. But those analogs, I think, are going to shock each and every one of you of where they have went. Because I will tell you, you know, sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees when you're in this fight, Tiffany. And we've been pretty deep in the forest. And it's been very interesting to see where they went. So we'll be back on Firing Line Radio in just a moment.
The California Rifle and Pistol Association has worked tirelessly for 150 years to promote your rights to self-protection, shooting sports, firearms collecting, hunting, conservation, and every aspect of your Second Amendment rights. CRPA works tirelessly and relentlessly to defend the civil and constitutional rights of individuals to choose to responsibly own and use firearms. Every dollar that CRPA receives from its members and donors stays and works in California to support your hunting and Second Amendment rights and the fight against politicians, elitists, and bureaucrats who would deprive individuals of those rights. Join the California Rifle and Pistol Association today at crpa.org. That's crpa.org.
Hi, folks. Rick Travis. If you're a concealed handgun carrier and have a firearm to defend your home, you need to have CCW Safe on your side. CCW Safe is your defense if you're forced to use your firearm for self-defense or the protection of a loved one. CCW Safe provides and pays 100% upfront defense funds for high-quality attorneys, expert witnesses, and investigators you need following a critical incident with no reimbursement. And they do it all for one flat yearly fee starting at $179 a year. CCW Safe has permit and non-permit plans to protect California residents in this state and while traveling across the country. So check out their new ultimate plan with no caps on criminal and civil defense, $1 million for bond coverage, a dedicated $1 million of civil liability, and many other benefits. You defend your life, CCW Safe will defend your freedom and financial future. In California, CCW Safe has got you covered. So join now at ccwsafe.com.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by Turner's Outdoorsman.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio. This is your host, Rick Travis, the legislative director for the California Rifle and Pistol Association. And folks, if you haven't joined the CRPA, now's the time to do it. Not only do we fight for your Second Amendment rights, both in the legislature and in the court system, but we have a myriad of programs designed to help you improve your skills in firearm safety, help to improve your skills and be able to shoot. And yes, folks, we even have many programs helping to defend your skills of how you will defend the Second Amendment, both with your family and friends, as well as the Capitol. For those of you in the IE, we have multiple chapters that are opening up throughout the Inland Empire that you can come and engage. And you can actually, if you so choose to get involved in legislative action, work with me through our legislative teams in each and every one of those chapters. So folks, basically, join the CRPA leaves you with no excuses not to be involved and be a proud patriot. And I know all of you that listen to the show are just that here on this station. Tiffany, going back to what we were talking about, and I have Tiffany Chevrant from Michonne Associates. She is one of the people that has fought valiantly for the past decade and a half for your rights here in California. Tiffany, we were talking about the historical analogs that the far left has willingly went for that I think it's really important. I was just out this week with some people in the IE talking to them. Very diverse group, and I told them that this was going to come up on a show and they needed to listen to it. So what are some of the analogs that, say, Attorney General Bonta has chosen to use to say, oh, no, 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 we can treat people in 2024 and 2025 this way because they did back, and then insert analog.
Yes, this has been a very interesting progression of how they're handling these historic analogs from the Bruin test that they have to meet. That's their burden as a state to show that there is some sort of historical law back in 17, 1800s that correlates with this modern law they're trying to pass. So where they have gone is very racist analogs from the 1950s, 1940. They've tried everything, but they're going back to the Black Codes, where it prevented Black men, and sometimes, depending on where you were, American Indian men from owning firearms. Not because there was any danger or anything like that, but because of, simply of the color of their skin. So the left who and the anti-gun group who is trying to enforce these laws is actually going back and saying, these are good laws that we want the court to consider in analyzing how these modern laws should affect people, because these laws prevented people from having firearms, so it should be fine for our laws to prevent people from having firearms. I mean, it is the craziest time I've ever seen with arguments that we're seeing in court cases right now, because who would ever think that that is where they would go and try to somehow say that racist laws are applicable to what we're doing today and get away with it and get away with it.
And then they also like, and I was appalled because, I mean, I think there were some when I was reading the judge's briefing on this that called him out on it, that there were not just against African-Americans, but against Asians, against different, you know, cultural population groups, Latinos. So for those of you out there that have that in your background, you got to go, wow. Including there was, I think, one reference even to the Irish, what was done back east.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so they were equitable. They went after all of us. But it was also they went after people based on their religious preference. They were pulling out examples of where Catholics and other, because of what their belief system was, couldn't do it. This is from the same party, folks, that is trying to sell you a bill of goods and telling you, no, we are your friends. We come in peace. No, not your friends. They don't come in peace. They kind of remind me of the Borg in Star Trek. They'll tell you whatever they can to get the cube next to you, and then they're going to take you over.
Can you imagine if they had tried to use these kinds of arguments, though, for voting rights or First Amendment rights? No one would stand for that. But because it's Second Amendment rights, somehow they've justified that these horrible laws from our past are applicable to what they're trying to do today.
Yeah, it's just, it never ceases to amaze me just how low our opposition will go to try to get what they want. And that's one of the things that obviously in this legislature this year, folks, we are going at the every gun owner policy of the far left that is designed to set up mandatory confiscation of your firearms in the state. The gloves are definitely off in the legislature. I would argue they're way off now also in the courts. And so this is consistent on their side, folks. They want to disarm us, period. Mm-hmm. They want to make us into serfs. They want to make us 150,000% dependent on them and remove everything. And we're seeing this scaled across the board. It is all out right now. And this is why you need to take part in voting. And I'm going to do something before we continue with Tiffany. For all of you who have called in while I've been, you know, hosting and previously guest hosted and worked with Phil Naiman for years, both of us have told you every vote counts. And this last week, we saw that. Tiffany, I don't know if you've been able to follow it because I know you've been really busy in court cases, but, you know, everybody said, well, how close can an election get? And here in California, we have the jungle rule that says the top two in the jungle get to go on. Well, we had a tie for second place. And people are like, a tie? Yes, 30,329 to 30,329. And that was after two counts, like a dead tie. Now they're spending money to have three different groups hand count every vote because they're finding this like, but folks, the fact that it's that close, even if they find one vote more for one person, doesn't matter to me. Every vote counts. And for you to think it doesn't, yeah, it does. And don't say, oh, well, that's because they gerrymandered. It's between two Democrats. That's the hilarity. So you can't even say, oh, well, they jerked around the machine. Nope. Every vote. So yeah. Folks, know that that's important because Tiffany, isn't the issue that we're facing now in the courts the judges?
Well, it's a little bit of the judges and it's the elected officials that keep passing these laws that we tell them they're unconstitutional. Don't do this. You're going to get it turned over. Unfortunately, those elected officials don't care because they're going to be at the next level of government, but they figure they're not going to be in their current situation. They're going to go run for Congress and who cares what happens to this law. And then now we have judges who, while Trump did appoint quite a few conservative judges to the Ninth Circuit, and that has helped us, in several of our cases to pull those panels. We do have judges that they do not want to rule, with a originalist view of the Constitution. They want to try to do these legal gymnastics and try to, you know, make whatever concessions they can to the governor and his, you know, cronies up there who are passing these laws. And so that's why it takes so long in court. A lot of times they play games, they extend it out. They try to, you know, every single time we win, they try to go en banc. En banc review by a court is supposed to be very rare. But in the Ninth Circuit, it's literally every Second Amendment case.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I was talking to one of your colleagues that I've had on the show a couple times, Costas, we were having a discussion earlier in the week, and one of those discussions centered around the fact that recently when he was in court, which we'll talk about that case in the next segment, but when he was in court, there were three judges. One was appointed by Jimmy Carter. One was appointed by Clinton, and the other one was appointed by Biden. And I think it's very interesting that people need to realize those appointments, like Carter, for crying out loud, I wasn't even able to vote when Carter was in office. You know, and so we have judges that, to me, they got to be ancient to still be in there if they were appointed by Jimmy Carter. And it's just incredible the impact that has on cases, because a lot of this is like who you draw for that three judge panel.
Yeah. And we have no ability to determine who that's going to be. It's just luck of the draw, and whatever judges you get, you get. So.
Yeah. And I think that's something that all of you have to realize. Those judges, a lot of them start off in DA races. When you look back at them, things like that, there were points where the people could have voted them out, which would have put a serious stop in their possibility for ever being appointed. It's not 100%, but it does work. Plus, part of it is, again, folks, we've got to vote in this election. We have the chance to change a lot of things on the landscape. We already did that in the primaries. We can continue that going in November. Your vote counts. Getting other people out to vote counts. You need to start talking. I heard a great thing, Tiffany, as you know, I've been working with some of the legislators in other states. And from Colorado, I heard the problem with our community at large is people care more, like in his state, about why aren't you wearing the Denver Broncos shirt? It's football season. Than saying, how could you possibly vote this idiotic law in? Like it's more acceptable to confront somebody over their football or lack thereof attire than it is to talk about the future of the country. And he said, we need to defend our rights, our belief system more vehemently than we do anything dealing with a sports team or anything else. And folks, let that resonate with you. Quit talking at tailgate and griping about all this stuff and join a group and start making changes. You can do that at crpa.org. There are other groups that we support. We have Sam Press all the time on from Gun Owners of California. If you can afford to join, you know, more than one, do so. But you need to get involved because the opposition is involved and they're involved in every aspect of your life. If you think about it, your grandparents didn't have to have licenses and permission for everything. We do. We let that happen and we need to change it. We'll be back on Firing Line Radio.
Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one hunting, fishing, and shooting sports retailer since 1971, now has 33 locations across California and one in Tucson, Arizona. Turner's is your one-stop shop for all your shooting, sports, and fishing tackle needs. They offer a full selection and unmatched prices on firearms, ammunition, gun safes, shooting accessories, archery equipment, and fishing tackle. Visit Turner's.com now and sign up for the Turner's Discount Club for free and get their weekly ads and members-only specials sent directly to your inbox. Turner's is a proud supporter of the fight to protect your rights in their continued support of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. For more information and to sign up for Turner's Discount Club or to shop online, visit turners.com.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio. This is Rick Travis, your host, the legislative director for the California Rifle and Pistol Association. And with me today is a colleague, very close friend, and a person that fights in the courts all the time for you, Tiffany Chevron of Michelle & Associates. You can also find that Tiffany is with a group called the Second Amendment Law Center, defending your rights across the country. That's 2ALC.org, 2ALC.org. Go and check them out. They do amazing work nationwide. So for those of you who are considering running, don't do it because these crazy laws are being tested everywhere. But if you have, reach out to them because they can help you. Tiffany, one of the things that I was talking to somebody over there in Colorado about as well was the twisted ways the analog is being used in the courts. And I know recently, and I believe it was the May case, you have some good examples that you can unpack for our folks today.
Yeah, so these analogs are causing quite the problem for the state, as we've already mentioned. So basically the Bruin decision that came down said if any law affects the Second Amendment, the next step is that the burden shifts to the state and the state has to produce these historical analogs or historical laws that show that the same type of law that they're wanting to put in place now was in effect back in the 1700s, 1800s. And that has caused real issues for states because they can't produce that. And that's their burden. And so they tried the racist ones and the anti-religious ones, like we've already talked about. And when that really hasn't worked out so well for them, because they've been, you know, chastised by courts for even bringing those up, thank goodness. Now what they are trying to do, the approach they're trying to do is to just completely change what the Bruin decision forces them to do, which is to find these historical analogs. They're saying, well, you know, we can't find exactly a historical analog, but this one is pretty close. Well, that one that's pretty close is maybe for a completely different purpose. So it's not as close as what they're trying to convince the court that it is. And one of those things that they did in the May case, which was just yesterday, I believe we had the oral arguments for May, in front of the three-judge panel. That is a carry provision under SB 2. SB 2 has two parts to it. One has to do with everyone getting their CCW licenses, and the other one has to do with sensitive places. And we challenged the sensitive places portion of that law because basically California was trying to make the entire state of California a sensitive place where you could not carry even with a licensed firearm, like a CCW. So what they're trying to do is say, well, there's this historical law back in the, you know, 1800s, 1900s that says you couldn't carry in markets. And so because there is this law that says you couldn't carry in markets or public places where a lot of people are, then you shouldn't be able to carry in place like L.A., or a open air market here in California, or, you know, a fair, wherever that is. But what they fail to note is that law way back when says you couldn't carry in a public place like a market in a threatening manner. They're leaving out these little details of those older historical analogs, hoping that they can convince the courts that, oh, there's this law here and it matches up with the one here, so we're all good. But they're leaving out those little details. And what that's forcing us to do as attorneys is to go through all of these historical analogs and make sure what the state is actually putting forward is what that law intended to prevent. The law didn't intend to prevent people from carrying in a very public place. It intended to prevent them from carrying in a public place in a threatening manner. And that's a big distinction when you're in a courtroom trying to argue that and go with this Bruin standard. And the state just does not like it. And they're trying every trick in the book to get around the Bruin standard, which is why we have these cases now backing up behind Duncan for their last glimmer of hope that something's going to come out of that Duncan ruling that they can get around the Bruin standard.
It sounds like we should start writing history books on the Second Amendment for the amount of history we're having to go back and look
at. Oh, we have charts and charts of these historical analogs. It has definitely become a historian's world where you have to know this if you're going to be writing these briefs or arguing them in court.
So continuing to talk on what's going on with the courts and what's going on specifically with some of these issues, where would you think we're going to go with Duncan? Because I know we all keep talking about Duncan's kind of like this wedge right now, and everybody is asking for the crystal ball, like, what's happening?
Well, unfortunately, I can't give you a straight answer. But as an attorney, I'm good at not giving that straight answer. It depends, right? And so what happened with Duncan is Duncan went, if you remember, it went all the way up to the Ninth Circuit. It got stopped behind Bruin. Bruin was ruled on by the Supreme Court. Duncan went all the way back down to the lower courts. We won there again under Judge Benitez. We've gone back up to the Ninth Circuit, where we won the first time, and the Ninth Circuit actually skipped over the panel and went straight to an en banc panel, and which is very unusual. And so now we're kind of in the situation where we're like, well, do we go ahead and start preparing to go to the Supreme Court? Because if they're already, if the Ninth Circuit is already willing to kind of forego their normal policies of us going back to that first three judge panel, skipping over them, because that's where we won at the Ninth Circuit, skipping over them and going on to the en banc panel, then maybe we need to go ahead and be preparing for the Supreme Court. I think probably either way, we're going to end up Supreme Court, whether we win or whether the state wins, because it's such a big case. It is, that's one of those cases. It's been going on for 10 years almost. Just going through the courts. And this is one of those things that the state loses a lot of cases because they're unconstitutional. This is one they do not want to lose. And so we'll probably end up, petitioning the Supreme Court either way for them to hear it.
So given the makeup currently of the Supreme Court, I think it would be safe to say that if they pull it up, we would win it. Potentially, I get asked, if that was to happen, what happens to these other cases? Do they immediately go to the Supreme Court? People ask these questions all the time. I figure since I have you on, you can kind of help me out by saying, here's the process, folks.
No, they do not go directly to the Supreme Court. So the same thing that happened with Duncan last year will happen probably with these cases. Whatever comes, if Duncan went to the Supreme Court would rule on that. That would take probably almost a year to get something out of the Supreme Court. And then from there, the Ninth Circuit, where all these cases are sitting, they would decide, do we rule on it based on, what's happening? Or they would probably send it back to the lower courts. It's called remanding back for additional briefing under whatever came out of the Supreme Court, under that new ruling. Now, if the ruling is, it's the same as Bruin, it is what it is, you should be following Bruin, then sure, they can just go ahead and say, okay, well, this decision stands, or we're going to vacate this decision if we lost. But, I mean, it's in our favor. The Constitution is in our favor right now, and right, the Bruin standard is in our favor. So unless, barring something traumatic that happens at the Supreme Court under Duncan, I don't see them shifting that much from what they came out with in Bruin just a little over a year ago.
All right. So beyond the cases we've talked about, what are the other pending cases that Michelle and Associates working on that people need to be aware of?
Wow. There's a lot of cases that we're working on right now. So we already talked about Bolin, the roster. There's also Miller, which is an assault weapon case. We have the May case that we just argued, which is actually being heard with two other cases, all on some sort of carry. One of those is out of Hawaii, and the other one is a California case. And then we also have the Duncan case, which is the ammunition. I know a lot of people care about that because they hate having to go through the process of getting their ammunition the way we have now.
You mean the Rohde case?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Rohde. Duncan is magazines. Yeah. Sorry. But the Duncan case, yeah, that's the one where you can't get ammunition. That's huge. So, and then the Rohde case is the I'm sorry, the Duncan case. I'm getting confused here. The Duncan case is the magazine case. Sorry about that. There's so many cases. But Duncan is the magazine, any magazine over 10 rounds. So that's also being part of this process of all the cases working its way through the court. And that, too, has been going through the court for 10 years. So, you know, there's a lot there. We just talked about all the wins that we've had. And I think on CRPA, there's actually a list called Newsom's Follies or something like that. And it lists all of the cases that are ongoing and whether or not we've secured injunctions or wins in those cases. And we're going to keep that list going because we keep getting wins, which is great.
Folks, that's what I need you to realize. We're going to go into kind of the cost and what goes on behind the scenes in these cases, but I want you to realize that the California Rifle Pistol Association and its allies have been working diligently on your behalf when we're not able to stop things inside the Capitol. And I want you to realize that we stop about 88% of everything introduced into the Capitol, which means if we were playing national sports, we'd all be in the Hall of Fame. But then when it goes to the courtrooms, we're also winning. So as much as this has been brutal for all of us, realize you're on the winning team. You're on the side that wins. We'll be back on Firing Line Radio.
The California Rifle and Pistol Association has worked tirelessly for 150 years to promote your rights to self-protection, shooting sports, firearms collecting, hunting, conservation, and every aspect of your Second Amendment rights. CRPA works tirelessly and relentlessly to defend the civil and constitutional rights of individuals to choose to responsibly own and use firearms. Every dollar that CRPA receives from its members and donors stays and works in California to support your hunting and Second Amendment rights and the fight against politicians, elitists, and bureaucrats who would deprive individuals of those rights. Join the California Rifle and Pistol Association today at CRPA.org. That's CRPA.org.
Hi, folks. Rick Travis. If you're a concealed handgun carrier and have a firearm to defend your home, you need to have CCW Safe on your side. CCW Safe is your defense if you're forced to use your firearm for self-defense or the protection of a loved one. CCW Safe provides and pays 100% upfront defense funds for high-quality attorneys, expert witnesses, and investigators you need following a critical incident with no reimbursement. And they do it all for one flat yearly fee starting at $179 a year. CCW Safe has permit and non-permit plans to protect California residents in this state and while traveling across the country. So check out their new ultimate plan with no caps on criminal and civil defense, $1 million for bond coverage, a dedicated $1 million of civil liability, and many other benefits. You defend your life, CCW Safe will defend your freedom and financial future. In California, CCW Safe has got you covered. So join now at ccwsafe.com.
AM 590, The Answer.
This portion of The Firing Line is brought to you by CCW Safe.
Welcome back to Firing Line Radio, folks. And in this final segment, here with me, Rick Travis, your legislative director, and Tiffany Chabron from Michelle & Associates, who's out there fighting for your Second Amendment rights in the court. We're going to look at two key things. The first one we're going to talk about is what goes on in a case. What does that look like? And before I start asking Tiffany, I'm going to tell you, lawyers, it's unbelievable how many thou shalt nots actually surround lawyers, which is why we all get frustrated, make jokes about, you know, what do you call 100 lawyers at the bottom of the ocean? Good start. And we say stuff like that because we don't understand what goes on in their lives, and they really are put through the ringer. And so this isn't an I love lawyer talk on the radio. This is a reality check for all of us. So, Tiffany, since I happen to know a couple of plaintiffs in the Duncan case that we've been talking about, you know, Virginia Duncan, wonderful lady, hunter and stuff that I worked with down out of San Diego, Gary Brennan, another person's on that case, and a couple others, they decide to become plaintiffs. We decide to file a case. And so there's an initial set of fees that we all have to come up with. But then in that first round, and I believe that is at the lower federal court where we file it, how many hours, and we're not going to hold you to exact numbers, but how many hours, how many hands get involved in prepping that first round?
Yeah. So first of all, we can have an attorney love fest if we really want to. I'm all for that, but we don't get love very much. But So I think actually it's a good question. And I know a lot of people ask these questions, you know, why does it cost so much money? Why is CRPA, you know, fundraising for cases all the time, or any organization fundraising for cases all the time? It actually starts even before that first filing, because we have you at the Capitol, the legislative director for CRPA, fighting these bills. And the whole legislative session, you're working with attorneys to try to make sure that we're addressing all of these issues in the bills, writing opposition letters, you know, all the things that come with that. And so through that process, there's research into these laws that already is happening, probably a year to 6 months in advance of the bill actually being passed. So we're trying to figure out, are there good claims, causes of action, that sort of thing. Then we start looking for
I'm going to stop you for a second. So folks, I want you to hear what Tiffany just said. Like, in that process, I'm working with usually 2 or 3 different attorneys to make sure all the arguments for a single bill. This last legislative cycle, we've had 162 bills collectively over the 2-year period. That happens 162 times. We stop, like I said, better than 85 to 87%, depending on the year of those bills. Mm-hmm. Now what we're going to go into is what happens with that 13 to 15% that moves on, Tiffany.
Yes, absolutely. So then we start the process of trying to locate potential plaintiffs for any kind of lawsuit. And those have to be very specific plaintiffs. We get a lot of people that volunteer, and we appreciate that so much because it gives us a pool of people to kind of pull from. But those plaintiffs are very important, and their damages or how the law affects them is very important. So we identify those, and then we start writing the complaint. And the complaint usually takes several weeks to, it can even take up to several months, depending on the detail the complaint could be. I mean, some complaints are 100 pages or more by the time you get all of the detail in there and all of the attachments and exhibits. So it just depends on the case. And all the way from that point, all the way up to, you hear a lot about motions for summary judgment being filed. We file those a lot. From that point, from point A to motion for summary judgment, we're talking probably easily $100,000 in cost. And that's on the low end of, you know, of costs for legal work of that magnitude. And all that depends on how much the state is going to play games and force us to do additional briefing or put off the case for longer or ask for additional time or file motions to dismiss. Like, all these things are constantly dropping into a case that mess up the timing of it. If you just look at regular timing on a case, it should just kind of flow. But along that timeline, you have all these little bombs that are being dropped that you have to deal with that are kind of take you off to this side road. So a lot of people don't understand that piece of it. And then once you get past the motion for summary judgment, you know, or a preliminary injunction, either one, preliminary injunction, the case could go on appeal. You appeal the injunction, not even the case. And then it goes back to the lower court to continue on that same road towards trial. And so it is a very complex and complicated process. We have a team of attorneys that work on all things Second Amendment, and this team of attorneys is amazing. And you know, we all have these different expertises that we bring to the conversations about how to address different laws. But it is a huge undertaking to challenge these Second Amendment cases. And that's exactly why last year the state of California did pass a law, 1327, that said if you challenge a Second Amendment law and you don't win on every single point, then all of the fees for the state get transferred to the plaintiffs and their attorneys. they were trying to make it even harder for us to challenge these unconstitutional laws around the Second Amendment. We were able to overturn that very easily because even the state's own attorney general refused to defend that law in court. And Newsom tried to throw his own attorneys in there, which is hilarious. And it, of course, they lost. And so the court just wasn't having the lack of access to challenge an unconstitutional law. Thank goodness. But that's why they did it, because they don't want to have to go through this process. And they know the expertise that CRPA legal team has. And they don't like fighting against that. And so it's a really big undertaking.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because I think so many people look at it and they're like, well, wow, Rick, you and your cohorts didn't stop it. Now this is going on. And why is it taking so long? And are you guys just milking? And none of us are milking. In fact, we would all prefer not to have to do this because it's just so tiresome doing it.
Yeah, but I mean, I can tell you, I know how hard you work up at there at the Capitol and all of your team. I can tell you the attorneys were working all through Thanksgiving, all through Christmas, all through New Year's, because there were so many filings that had to happen. And the court doesn't care that it's a holiday. The court doesn't care that you want to go on vacation. The court doesn't care that you're sick. You work and get those filings in. And our team is working as fast as we can to get these things taken care of, because we know it affects our rights. It affects our rights too. We're gun owners on the legal team. We are Second Amendment advocates. And so it affects us just as much as it affects the people out there in the public. And so we want to overturn these laws as well.
Yeah, and that's why I just wanted to bring that up, because I think people, you got to realize this is one heck of a fight. And for the amount of money that it costs to become a member at CRPA, what you get in return in workload alone is just absolutely amazing. And that's before we get to all the other benefits that we pass on to the membership. And so, folks, this wasn't a membership drive, but this is to let you know that unlike other organizations throughout nonprofits that get called on the carpet for doing dumb things with people's money when they give it, this isn't that kind of place. Everybody here is working on a shoestring to try to make this work for everyone. We're up against literally a Goliath here in the state of California. And I want to finish with, folks, do not think you can run from California, because Tiffany will tell you the same thing. There are court cases that mirror everything that has went on in California in the past 15 years that are popping up throughout the Western United States. And that legal team that has defended you in California is now having to defend there. So if you move somewhere and you're like, wow, those sound like some familiar names, it's because, yes, they hone their skill sets here, and then they take it where they know you're weakest. And I hate to say this, but a lot of your states, especially in the Western U.S., just don't have the experience. It's not that there's not good people in there that care. They're trying to fight for you. They just have been able to live under this idea of it can never happen here. And now it is. And so the wake-up call is, this is a historic fight for the very fabric of the nation. This is a fight that impacts everybody who ever owned a firearm. I don't care how you obtained it. I don't care if it's always been in the closet, under the bed, you know, in a nightstand, or you're out there competitively using it. From one extreme spectrum to the other, regardless of party, regardless of everything, they want to take them away. And if the Second Amendment falls, every other right in the Bill of Rights will fall. I'll close this week with this. Those rights do not belong to the government. They belong to you, endowed by a creator. That is what the Founding Fathers said. That is what stands. That is what we fight for day in, day out. And as I say every week, be safe, shoot straight, and please fight back for your rights and for those of the people that will follow you. Have a good week.
The Firing Line Radio Show has been brought to you by the California Rifle and Pistol Association, CCW Safe, and Turner's Outdoorsman. Turner's Outdoorsman, California's number one hunting, fishing, and shooting sports retailer since 1971, now has 33 locations across California and one in Tucson, Arizona. Turner's is your one-stop shop for all your shooting, sports, and fishing tackle needs. They offer a full selection and unmatched prices on firearms, ammunition, gun safes, shooting accessories, archery equipment, and fishing tackle. Visit Turner's.com now and sign up for the Turner's Discount Club for free and get their weekly ads and members-only specials sent directly to your inbox. Turner's is a proud supporter of the fight to protect your rights in their continued support of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. For more information and to sign up for Turner's Discount Club or to shop online, visit Turner's.com.
AM 590, The Answer.